This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Yes, it's back again. Shady's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back? 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 Guess who's back?
Final hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. If you ever miss anything from the show, you can always find it on demand. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcasts. And the podcasts are also available online at charlestonsportsradio.com and through our free app. Search ESPN Charleston in the App Store. And through that app, you can always listen to the show live or on demand from anywhere in the world. You can always get in touch with the show as well online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Just click on our show page. And there you can leave a comment for the show. You can always get to us on Twitter at Morrow Middays. You can text the show 843-608-1734. You can always join the conversation on the phones as well, 843-721-9500, to give us a call. The Atlanta Braves playing right now with the Brewers. They're scoreless in the third inning. Braves are just trying to get back to 500. Typically slow starts for defending World Series champs. And after the way last year went for the Braves, right, nothing new for them. We'll get back to the Jimmy Butler talk tonight. You get the Warriors. Mavericks should be interesting. The NBA playoffs continue. Get into all that. Most interesting teams in each NFL division. And I think they mostly have something in common. Get to all sorts of stuff throughout the hour. I got a couple of things that, I don't know, maybe I got to complain about as well. But here's one thing. So last night after the Citadel got their doors blown off, at least for seven innings, and credit to the Citadel for turning it into a game late. College of Charleston, I bring on their great closer just to close out that thing. That was not one of those. You know, if you're trying to get people interested in baseball, when people complain like baseball games are too long, I've always said I don't think people complain about the length of a baseball game. It's the amount of inaction, the amount of things not happening. And last night was a 3.5-hour game, but more than that, there was 10 errors and about 20 walks. So that's one of those that if you were watching baseball for the first time, you would think, like, this is horrible. This is not good. This is not entertaining. It wasn't great baseball. And the Citadel lost, and now we get ready for the conference tournament next week. Good win. The College of Charleston's really good. We'll see if they can get to the NCAAs and make some noise. But after the game was over, got out of there just about 10 o'clock. I pushed my luck. And I hate being one of those guys that goes into a restaurant right before they close. But a man's got to eat. And now I don't sit in those restaurants. I'm not one of those. You ever see those people? They go in before they close. They get the meal and they sit down. It's like, come on, right? Be a little courteous. Take it to go, which I did last night. But I went to a place, and the name's not even important. I got in there at about 9:48. The restaurant closes at 10.
Ooh.
Right? So that's still a 12-minute buffer. I go in there, go get my meal to go. And they're missing certain things. You could probably guess where I was. It's one of those where you walk down and you pick different items.
Sure.
They were out of certain items. Or, you know, they have very little left. They don't give you a normal portion because this is all we have left. My whole thing on restaurants. Now, Trent, you've worked in restaurants, right?
Numerous, yeah. A lot of years. A lot of years.
I never have. So maybe I'm the one off base. You can set me straight. If you're open until 10, I think you got to be open until 10. How often do you go to a place and, like, the chairs are up on the table already and they're sweeping and they don't close for another 20 minutes? And I know, look, they want to get out of there and get home as quick as they can. But it's also kind of a job. Like, I'm supposed to be on the air till 3. I don't pack it in at 2:40 and say, like, all right, let's just play music for the next 20 minutes so I can shut it down and get out of here right at 3 or whatever it may be. Let's run an old interview so I can leave early. I don't do that. My job is to be on the air 12 to 3. Restaurant's supposed to be open 10 to 10, whatever it is. If I go in there at 9:48 and you tell me we don't have chicken or whatever it is, well, what you're supposed to have chicken. Restaurant's still open. I think restaurants need to stay committed. And I know also, the other thing I'll say before I get your thoughts, I know financially it may not always be the wisest thing. You don't want to open up a whole new thing of chicken if it, most of it's going to go to waste. I get that too. But if you tell me you're up until 10 o'clock and I go in there at 9:48, I expect the same service at 9:48, 12 minutes before close, as I do 12 minutes after open. Maybe that's just me. Now, you've worked in restaurants.
Yeah.
What would be your opinion on such a matter?
Well, Luke, I think normally in the restaurants that I worked in, about 30 minutes before close, you're supposed to start cleaning the stovetops, the ovens, things of that nature. So normally the 30 minutes before close, it's shut down. The kitchen is shut down, per se. They're not making any more new food. And I know I've kind of connected the two. I know where you were last night now, and I understand their side of it. Hey, we're 12 minutes before close. We got the stovetop shut down. We got right. No chicken left. And if we open another, we're only going to be able to use it for this next 10 minutes, and yeah. Then it will be gone before the next day because you're not saving open chicken. That's just not what you do. So, Luke, I understand where you're coming from, but in the restaurants that I worked in, and I worked at a resort restaurant, so mm-hmm. It was always a problem 30 minutes before close that we were shutting down our kitchen because people were coming in late. You know, they've been on the beach drinking right. all day. True. It was like they want food before they leave. But also we closed at 10, so it was like if you're not eating before then, you had a job to do, you know? So I understand where you're coming from, but normally they close it down about 30 minutes before, and whatever they have, you know, there is going to be what they use for the remainder of the night.
Which I get. Look, I get the logistics. I get, look, they want to get out of there. I don't blame them. If I was in their position, as soon the restaurant closes at 10, I want to leave at 10:01. Forget any sort of cleanup. I want to get out of there. I get it. But I'm just saying, if you're going to say you're open till 10, I want the full functioning restaurant until 10 o'clock, just like if it was an hour earlier.
I do think it's different, though, like fine dining or like a nice restaurant, like a sit-down restaurant and everything. You know, like you really can't take it to go. You basically can take any food to go now, but like there's restaurants where you'd probably want to go sit down. I understand it from that standpoint. It's like if you get in there, you know, at 9:30, we're closing at 10. We got nothing. Like we have right. to serve you. Right. There's no doubt. The problem is with some people, they're like, oh, we'll get a round of drinks first. You know, we're 30 minutes till close. It's like, hey, let's get in. Let's eat. You know, it's quick. Everybody's trying to go home. But I do understand your point because all the side work you have to do before you close it up, you want to make sure that is done relatively before closing time. But if you're a good functioning restaurant, you normally would start it at 10 and just kind of bite the bullet and leave around 10:30, 10:45. But at a restaurant like you're talking about, they're going to leave at 10:30, 10:45 regardless because the amount of stuff that they have to put in the freezers and everything like that. So I get both sides. I do.
And I agree. I see both sides too. And look, I wasn't that ticked off. It's just something that always stands out to me. And it's not just this place. I go to restaurants a lot after games, whatever it may be. I'm traveling. And you walk in just before close, and it's like, oh, we only have this and this. And it's like, well, it's you know, it's 9:45. You're supposed to be open another 15 minutes. It's not 9:50 yet. I'm not walking in 60 seconds before you close. You know, like 15 minutes is still, that's a pretty big window. Why don't you just close at 9:45 then? Instead of telling me you're open until 10 and you don't have my meal for me. Get out of here.
Would you ever say that to them? Be like, well, you might as well just close now then, you know, because you don't have the chicken.
Honestly, I was kind of close last night to saying something like, oh, I thought you were open until 10, something along those lines. Like, go in the back and get some chicken for me, please.
Fire up that stovetop. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Make sure it doesn't taste soapy. I know you just cleaned
it. That's right.
It.
We got 12 minutes. You can make a lot of chicken. Get that chicken going. So anyways, my mother has weighed in. She said I sound like Larry David from Curb Your Enthusiasm.
I mean, this is, I will say, Luke, this is, you know, an older man, older woman's take on this type of thing. But, hey, that happens sometimes. I have some old man takes as well. But I do understand where you're coming from. I always felt bad when people would come up and be like, hey, can I get this and that? It's like, we're 15 minutes till close. Our stovetop is shut down. I've got some pre-made salads here. I've got a couple pre-made sandwiches I can give you. But I can't make you, you know, a burger and fries right now. I just can't do it.
And again, I wasn't all that. I got what I wanted. It was fine. It's just the principle that I think about. It doesn't really tick me off that much. And I didn't say anything last night. I was very courteous. I always am. I'm not one of those. I don't give the restaurant workers a hard time. I tip. I'm fine. But I just thought it always registers with me whenever I go into a restaurant, you know, like 20 minutes before it closes and the chairs are just make closing time at 9:30 then if that's what time you want to get out. And instead of claiming you're up until 10 and then having a limited menu.
Did you tip last night?
So now here's another debate.
There we go.
No, I did not tip last night. But not because of what was going on.
Okay.
I don't tip. I don't tip takeout or this, I guess this is the same idea as takeout. You know, like if they make it at the counter, if you order at the counter and go, I'm sorry, I'm not tipping. You just made the food. Well, usually you tip for service. Now, sure. I know, Trent, as somebody who worked in a restaurant, people that work in restaurants are very sensitive to the idea, right? You got to make sure you tip because people have been in that position where they're working off the tips. But I think this kind of restaurant's different where you're not waiting tables or anything.
No, there's an hourly wage. Like, if you're a server at some restaurant, you're getting $3 an hour, and all you rely on is tips. Now, at a, you know, a fast food, wherever it is, you have a set hourly rate, and if you add a tip on, that's just, you know, that's extra luck right there.
Yes, so that's a good point. See, that's what I agree with. Now, if it's a sit-down restaurant, absolutely I'm tipping. Although, I'll also say this, and this is probably going to make me sound bad, but I have never not tipped. And I even have never given like a poor tip. The lowest I'll go is 15% if the service was bad, and I'll go up from there. But I apply the tip how you're supposed to. The tip is based off of it's supposed to be based off of service. So if it's good service, I give a better tip. If it's terrible service, my bare minimum, my bottom is 15%.
Yeah,
I won't go lower than 15%.
I can agree with that. Yeah,
but so often people believe that the tip is a given and it should be like we keep creeping up now. Right now it's like 25%. Some people are looking for. But even the tip, and I know, as Trent just said, right, you're making only like $3 and you're relying on those tips. But the tips, we've gotten to a point in society where tips have become a necessity, where you're expected to always tip, when that was never the idea of the tip. The tip, by design, is supposed to be like a little extra. They do a good job, you throw them a few extra bucks. Now it's like, you better tip, and you better tip 20%, regardless of how the service was. They don't tip in, I know someone who just went to Italy. They said they don't do any tips over there.
Wow.
Yep, no tips over there.
Not in your home country.
That's right.
Maybe that's where it comes from.
Yeah, that's where it comes
from.
It's
in the blood.
No tip.
It's in the blood.
No, if the service is good, I'm a generous tipper.
Yeah, I go, if it was great service, yeah, you're getting 25%. Yeah. Like, percent. You just bite the bullet. You know, that's what you do.
And if it's bad, sir, I'll still tip you. But, you know, it's not as deserving. It's based on the service. You got to take care of me.
You're at home. You're at home getting, you know, a delivery service. What's the tip look like on that?
So I remember we did this on the show before, and we even had a pizza delivery guy, a listener, who worked as a pizza delivery. We had a few people weigh in, and they said I was good. I usually round up. I'll do like $5.
Okay.
So if I get like a pizza delivered, it's $15. I'll pay $20, give them the extra $5. I usually round up. If it's $16, I probably still give $20, give a $4. I usually round up to like the next $5. 5 or 0, 15, 20, 25, whatever it is. Now, if it's like 18, I'm going to tip more than $2. But you get the idea. If it's 15, 16, right, push it up to 20. I usually do about $5 probably for like a pizza delivery, Chinese food delivered, whatever it is. I think where these food deliveries, and we've gone on a whole thing. I didn't even mean to spend this much time, but I'm fascinated by this stuff. As I always say on the show, I love talking about like the social etiquette and that sort of stuff of life. I could do a 3-hour show just talking about, I guess, like Larry David and Curb Your Enthusiasm, just talking about things in the world and if they are how they should be. But I think Uber and like Grub, I think they do themselves a disservice. They tack on so many fees. I was having this conversation on that trip I went on a couple of weeks ago with my buddies, and we were looking at the receipts. The price almost doubles when you do like Uber Eats because of all these fees. And at that point, you're probably less likely to tip because you're already paying so many other things. That I think if you take out some of those fees, I think people would be more would give bigger tips for delivery drivers. But otherwise, you're getting a $20 meal after the charges is like $50, and then you're thinking, oh, now I got to. Now they're asking for a tip on top of this. I'm only going to give X number of dollars instead of spending even more.
Now I wonder that because you're right, the delivery fees. Now there's some restaurants, you know, where you can get like a free delivery fee or whatever,
yes.
Like you don't have to pay it, but. I wonder if that, like, a portion of the delivery fee goes to the Dasher or whoever is coming. I would hope so because, you know, it's tough to add a good tip when you've already added on $12 of taxes and stuff like that. So I would much rather give that all to the person who's having to go pick it up and bring it rather than give it to DoorDash or whoever it is.
Yes. Two things on that. Number one, yes, I agree with you. I think people assume that that's going to the driver anyway, so I don't need to tip as much.
Right.
Number two, that's why some people tip the drivers in cash, at least pre-pandemic now, like nobody wants to interact with anyone. But tip them in cash so they know it's going right to the driver.
Right. Put it right in your pocket.
Yeah, instead of Uber or Grubhub or any of these DoorDash taking a portion of the tip that you pay in the app. I've seen people do that. They'll pay them in cash, good old cash. By the way, you ever have cash on you?
Not really anymore. No. Yeah, I mean, you know, to pay a cover or two, you know, on the weekends, you gotta have some cash if there is a cover charge, which that's a whole nother topic for a whole nother day, Luke. I don't want to get into it, but I've had some run-ins with a couple people being like, how much to get in right now? Are you kidding me? You're just trying to, you know, you're just trying to gouge me on my money here. But, I'll have a 20 on me, you know, whenever.
I've gotten to the point in my life, if they have a cover charge, I'm probably not going.
That's where I am in my life.
Yeah, forget that. There's enough places out there. You're going to charge me to come through the doors. I'll go somewhere else.
No, you wouldn't believe it. $40 to get in. I said, I'm
sorry. Definitely going somewhere else.
What?
Yeah.
Does this include an open bar or what's happening?
Are you getting bottle service or what? They got dancers in there or something? What's going on here? If you have a cover charge. I remember one time I was somewhere, I think with my brothers, and we went out somewhere, and I had a hat on, and I think it was a backwards hat. And they said, you can't come in here with a backwards hat. And I said, all right, I'm not coming in here at all. Forget that. And Bobby wants to call me bougie. We went to some place. They said, sorry, no hats in here. We said, all right, we'll go somewhere else. I've gotten to the point in my life now where if there's restrictions, I'm not coming through the doors. Let me be me. All right? You're going to charge me to come in the restaurant? No, thanks. I'll go somewhere else. Even if they don't have any chicken for me with 15 minutes until close.
We did just get a call from a DoorDash driver. They don't get any of the delivery fee or any of the taxes. Mm. They live off of the tips, folks. So make sure you're tipping your Dashers or whomever is bringing you your food a good amount because they live off the tips.
See, this is where I think those services are doing their drivers a disservice because people just assume either they get a portion or, like I said, they're already charging you up the yin-yang in these fees. You're thinking, I got nothing left for a tip now, or at least not as generous of a tip. It's crazy. I got no problem tipping, but you're going to you double my price just for the delivery. And I'm not talking about the drivers. I'm talking about these services. So I've gotten to the point. Here we go again. I've also gotten to the point in my life where I'm saying sometimes I'm lazy enough. I want the food just delivered to me. I'm watching a game, whatever.
Yeah.
But more often than not, nowadays, when I want to get delivery, I just switch it to takeout because of these fees. Because I tell myself, stop being so lazy. You can get in the place is right down the road. It's a 5-minute drive. You don't need it delivered to spend twice as much. Stop being lazy.
I agree with you there.
Yeah. It's not even about the money so much like it is, but it's not. It's about me, like, shaming myself. Like, why are you so lazy that you need food brought to you? Get in the car and go pick it up. It's right down the road. And so I don't do a lot of delivery anymore. I'll do a lot of takeout, but I'll go pick it up so I don't feel so bad about myself.
And also, like, you don't know. Like, it could take an hour and a half to get there. You could just go take out. But also, there are some, you know, hardworking delivery drivers out there we need to pay.
Absolutely. You bring up a good point. I've had some bad experiences where it took like over an hour to get my food, and I thought, forget, I'm just going to go pick it up. They tell me it's ready in 15 minutes. I'm hungry. I'll go grab it. That's another big thing. Last thing I'll say on all this, and then we'll try to get back to sports. We'll see. I was just saying how I don't, 20 minutes left in the show. I'm not going to pack it in, and here we are spending time talking about tips. So I'm a hypocrite. But the other thing, too, on the tipping, and we kind of touched on this earlier, but it's really awkward now when they have those the machines with the touch screen, and they turn them around for you. That is so awkward because they're standing there hovering over you, and the first question you have to answer is the tip. But this is like at these places, like a deli, you're getting a sandwich. I don't tip for that. I tip, like I said, for the sit-down service. That's what I'm tipping for. But it's always so awkward when you're paying at the register and they swing that thing around. Oh, you just have to answer a few questions, and then you have to do it in front of them.
Oh, yeah.
And it asks you, like, do you want a tip? How much do you want a tip? And they're standing there, like, just staring at you, and I have to press, like, no, I'm not going to tip today.
Every local bougie coffee shop downtown has one of those. They flip it around the first thing, and they do it, Luke. This is how they get you. The first one's 25, 20, 15, 10.
Ah.
And so your eyes immediately go to the first one. I end up, you know, I'm getting a coffee and a breakfast sandwich or whatever. That's, what, $9, $10? I end up paying, you know, $15 for the whole thing because I clicked the 25, not even realizing they get you there.
Yeah, that's how they get you. I like that move. I'll be honest.
Oh, it's incredibly smart. Yeah, great business.
Good. You got to answer the tip, then you got to do the whole receipt thing. It's a whole ordeal. Anyways, I'm a generous tipper, but it needs to require sit-down service. Right, take out, anything like that. Don't put your little screen in front of me and try to shame me into a 25% tip. I digress. By the way, I meant to circle back to what we were talking about to open the show, where what I find most fascinating about the Heat and the Celtics series is that I think this is a showdown for superstar status. There's only so much room for superstars in the NBA at one time. The NFL, same idea, right? We talk about these quarterbacks, and is he elite? Is he not? There can only be so many. Otherwise, you start making it too easy when we're talking 20 quarterbacks are tier one quarterback, right? There can't be that many. There's a limit to all this. People that say he's a top 10 player, now he's become a top 10, and they say it about 20 guys. You realize that every time you put a new player in the top 10, you got to take somebody else. You can't be putting everybody in the top 10. And so same idea with the superstar status. And I referenced earlier, like, that's why the Levitard show does a bit where they make it look like a nightclub. And you're waiting out, the superstars or the stars are waiting outside. And you have to wait till somebody leaves before you can go in because the place is too full. And so that's the idea. If we get a new superstar, that means somebody else is losing super in front of their star status. This is a big thing in the NBA. You have stars, you have superstars, you have non-stars, you have role players, the status of these guys. So in this case, I think only one may be able to prevail. We'll see how this series goes. And I think it's between Jimmy Butler and Jason Tatum in this series. And what's so impressive about Butler is the fact that he gets better in the playoffs. Right? Jason Tatum shows flashes. But I look at last night as the first piece of evidence. And look, I think this is a 7-game series. Well, I said 6. I think the Celtics win in 6, even though they lost last night. I picked them to lose last night, still win in 6. We'll see how the future games play out. But based off of the first game of this series last night, right now, Butler certainly is leading that race of which one of these guys could be a superstar or is ready to become that superstar. It's clear that it's Jimmy Butler, not only based off of one game, but just based off of this postseason. Jason Tatum has had some inconsistent performances. Against Milwaukee, he had a game where he scored only 10 points. He disappeared in a couple of second halves. He was not his team's leading scorer in 2 of their 4 wins. That's not a superstar. In Game 7, he had as many turnovers as made baskets and was not the leading scorer in the biggest game of the year. And last night, he made one shot in the second half as the Celtics disappeared, and Jimmy Butler had 24 points in the second half and went for 41 total in the game. And I laid out the numbers earlier, but what makes Butler impressive and why I think he's pushing himself to that superstar status is that he's not a top 10 player in the league during the regular season. Maybe isn't even top 20. We'd have to sit down, come out with a list. It could be debatable. But when it comes to the playoffs, I think Butler has shown, especially this year, but really throughout his career, he becomes a top player in the playoffs. Now, I'm not going to run through my levels of clutchness once again like I did earlier, but the point is there's that group of players that are good in the regular season and become even better in the postseason. They become maybe even elite in the postseason. And based off of just that, like Eli Manning, I think Jimmy Butler's a better regular season player than Eli Manning was, but Eli was an average quarterback. But he's going to be a Hall of Famer based off of 2 postseasons because he stepped up in the biggest moments. Nick Foles is not going to be a Hall of Famer, but he will always have that Super Bowl MVP. He stepped up in big moments. In the regular season, he wasn't good enough to keep a job. But in the postseason, he stepped up and played well. Earned him a nickname we can't say on air. And when it comes to Jimmy Butler, similar idea. Good player in the regular season. Even maybe a star in the regular season, but he becomes a superstar in the playoffs. This year, he averaged 21 points in the regular season. He's up to 30 in the playoffs. He plays better in the biggest games. And if you go round by round for his career, same idea. Every round, his points per game increase. He plays better in the Eastern Conference Finals than the first round, when the opponent theoretically gets tougher and the pressure gets higher and you're a little more worn out as the postseason wears on, and he's still getting better. Jimmy Butler, I think, deserves a lot of credit for the way he plays in the playoffs. Now, look, he's only been in 1 NBA Finals, and he's never won a championship. And so maybe that hurts. But when you watch Jimmy Butler and you go look at his numbers and what he's done, it's really impressive what he's accomplished in the playoffs in some big games. And last night may have been the most impressive. If you add up his points, rebounds, assists, steals, blocks, no player has a higher total in those 5 categories in any playoff game ever. That was one of the most impressive performances last night. And then consider the fact that they were trailing at halftime. He almost single-handedly carried them in that third quarter to a victory in a big game. That was impressive last night. Jason Tatum disappeared. Jimmy Butler turned it on in that third quarter. And that helped the Heat win that game last night. And my theory on all of this is just that we love offense. And when you watch Jason Tatum, you see that potential. When you watch Game 6 against the Bucks and he goes for 46 points, he could be an offensive star. And we love offense. That's why these leagues keep changing the rules to increase offense. It's part of the reason why we love Michael Jordan so much. Now, look, I think Michael Jordan's the greatest player of all time. But if you're driving around, don't close your eyes if you're driving, right? But if you're sitting at your desk, wherever you may be, you're listening. If you were to close your eyes, you could do it later when you're somewhere safe. You close your eyes and think of Michael Jordan, right? What stands out to you? What do you think of? I know for me, it's just him soaring through the air. And it's the dunks. And it's jumping from the foul line. And it's the Craig Elo shot. And it's a shot over Byron Russell. But as I said earlier, what set up that shot over Byron Russell to win the 98 finals was the fact that Jordan got a steal on the defensive end. But we don't think of that. And when we think of the play, we don't even think of the complete sequence. That, yeah, it was actually a great play he made on defense that set up the possibility of hitting that jumper. All we think of is That move where he pushes Russell out of the way, steps back, hits the pull-up, and then holds the follow-through, that's what you think of. And so when I look at Jimmy Butler and Jason Tatum, Tatum has, I would say, a higher ceiling on the offensive end. He could be a much better offensive player than Jimmy Butler, and I think that's why people are kind of infatuated with Tatum. And Butler, for a long time, was kind of more of a defensive guy, grinded up. He could score, don't get me wrong, but for example, again, this year he averaged 21, right? He's not towards the top of the league in scoring. And 21's good. That's nothing to mock or laugh at. You're scoring 21 a game in the NBA, you're doing something right. But he's not a top-tier scorer until we get to the playoffs. Now his points are up. He's averaging 30 points per game in the playoffs. And the last thing I'll say on all of this in regards to Jimmy Butler, and this is something I'm very curious to see, the rest of this series. But the other thing, too, is look at the resume. 32 years old, fourth team, has been in the playoffs five straight years, has gone to one NBA Finals, didn't win it, has been 500 in the playoffs. Whose resume is that? You probably assume Jimmy Butler, because that's who I've been talking about all afternoon, but that's the same resume of James Harden. And for Harden, we hold him in the category of one of the best we've seen over the past decade. Problem is, when it comes to the playoffs, James Harden shrinks. When it comes to Jimmy Butler, he gets better. But we don't consider Butler in the same category as Harden. And maybe we should. Maybe that's the hot take of the day, other than the tipping thoughts and the restaurant and everything else. But maybe we should start considering Jimmy Butler in that same category as a James Harden. We put James Harden in the top tier of players. The guy disappears in the playoffs. Jimmy Butler shows up, plays his best in the playoffs. And they're both 32. James Harden looks like he doesn't belong in the league. Jimmy Butler looks like he suddenly has become one of the best players in the league at the same age. And that's impressive, too. That was remarkable performance last night from Jimmy Butler. Now, look, granted, the Celtics were missing some guys. I still think the Celtics win the series, but when it comes to the players, I mean, that was a great performance from Jimmy last night. Meanwhile, the Celtics, they're missing two guys, missing two starters. They need a little more out of Jason Tatum. And by the second half, he made one shot in the second half. And you want to sell me on the idea that he's a superstar. You want to be my latex salesman. Right? And not going to happen. You need to make more than one shot when the team's depending on you in a big playoff game. He disappeared in multiple second halves in that Bucks series. They lost game three. He didn't do anything in the second half in Milwaukee. Can't happen. LeBron James, Kevin Durant, right? Some of these best players, even a Steph Curry, they don't just disappear in the second half of a big playoff game, make one shot for a whole half. Even if they have off nights, they're a little more productive than that. We'll see what happens in game two. By the way, game one tonight, Golden State and Dallas. I think the Warriors win the series in six. I think they win game one tonight. I think they win, probably cover the 5 points as well. But I'll tell you what, the saving grace for Dallas, two things. Number one, what do the Warriors have going for them? Great three-point shooting team. Well, Dallas has made the most threes of any playoff team, so maybe they can match Golden State. Number two, what does Golden State have going for them? A star like Steph Curry. Well, Dallas has an even better star right now today in Luka Doncic. So the Mavs, just from that standpoint, may be able to match the strengths of Golden State. They don't have the experience, and they don't have the supporting cast of Golden State, and I don't think they have the coach of Golden State. I think it'll be a good series. I think Luka still continues to ball out, and I think he will single-handedly, you know, bring this to force a game six or potentially seven, bring the Warriors close to elimination. But I think Golden State's a little too much. They win tonight. They win the series. The Mavs lost game one each of their first two rounds. I think they lose game one tonight. But I think it should still be a fun series. 843-721-9500. Let's go to the phones. George is with us. George, what's going on? How are you?
Yeah, Luke, great hearing from you. And as always, lots of basketball knowledge. One of you could help a brother out here. Can you name the coach that coached the Bulls to three championships and then he jumped ship to L.A., famous for the triangle offense and defense?
Yeah, Phil Jackson.
Phil Jackson, that's what I couldn't remember.
Hey, always here to help. Happy to help, George. yeah, Phil Jackson.
Yeah, right back at you, big guy. Take care.
Hey, likewise. We'll be your Google around here. Phil Jackson. Tex Winter was the originator of the triangle, and Phil Jackson became famous off of it, but so on and so forth. When we come back, an important question, and it's not about tipping. Plus, while we're on the subject of random thoughts that I've had today, look, I'll be honest with you. I got up early this morning, earliest I've been up in a while. I had to go do some things work-wise this morning with the Citadel. So, you know, you get up early in the morning, you don't get a lot of sleep, you're a little loopy. I had a thought this morning about some sort of an appliance that we all have that I don't understand. We'll get to that. Plus, a very important question that is sports-related and a whole lot more. It's the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Come and tell all of the It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. After last night's draft lottery, I gave my thoughts on that earlier. Got a question that I'll ask in just a few moments. Plus, as I said, I've been saying all afternoon, I'll pay off the tease. There's an appliance that we all have. You have it in your home, and there's a very obvious question I have about this appliance. I don't understand why it is the way it is. I have to get to this later on as well. But first, before we do all of that, which team is the most interesting team in each division in the NFL? And I think they all have something in common. Let's run through these divisions real quick. In the AFC East, the most interesting team to me would be Miami. And when I say interesting, I guess what I really mean is a team that could go like in either direction. Unpredictable. You don't really know what you're going to get out of them. The Bills should win that division. The Patriots may not be as good as they were last year, but we kind of know New England. They'll be well-coached. Mac Jones is solid. Is he good enough to win enough? I don't know, right? But he's not going to embarrass them. They'll be a defensive team, play some low-scoring games. They'll win some games you don't think, and you know they won't be great this year. But it's the Dolphins are the most interesting team in the AFC East because they bring in a new coach. They're trying to figure out the question about Tua. They brought in Tyreek Hill. Great additions on the defense. Even Raheem Mostert in the backfield. The Dolphins have had one of, if not the best, off-seasons this year. But just as we were discussing last hour in regards to the Eagles, it's all just going to come back to the quarterback. And it doesn't matter how good the rest of the roster is if the quarterback's not good enough. To me, in the AFC East, the Dolphins are the most interesting team. Remember, they won only one less game than the Patriots last year. And so I don't know what their win total is, but I could see them either competing with the Bills for the division, or I could see them winning maybe only like five games. If Tua's not good, and maybe Mike McDaniel, I hate to say it, but maybe he's a disaster. We love him around here, but who knows? He's never been a head coach. Maybe he's in over his head. First-year coaches sometimes can struggle. On average, only about one of them actually makes the playoffs each year. The other ones usually have losing records. So who knows? There's a large range for the Dolphins. In the AFC North, most interesting team to me, you can make a fair point for just about all of them. And the Bengals is very fascinating to follow up their Super Bowl run. A lot of people think that they will certainly fall back to the pack. But I think you have to say the Browns because of a couple of things. Number one, they're the Cleveland Browns. And so they're always, it's almost like a circus, right? You put a tent over that stadium, the circus is in town. But questions about the quarterback most specifically. Deshaun Watson, is he going to be suspended? Does he play all 17 games? How good is he going to be with this roster? I mean, he was good in Houston and didn't have as much to work with. Is he going to be a top-tier quarterback? Are the Browns going to be one of the best teams in the AFC? The Ravens are a little more consistent and reliable. The Bengals are just in a Super Bowl. You like to think, you know, they'll be there in the end this year. And the Steelers, we're all kind of accepting that, you know, it's a little bit of a rebuild. They're going to take a step back. The Browns are that team, though, same idea. I could see them going either way. If Deshaun doesn't get suspended and plays every game, I don't know, maybe they win 13 games this year. If Deshaun, let's just say, gets suspended for six games and Jacoby Brissett has to play and it's a tough division, and it's his first year there, and Deshaun, at that point, wouldn't have played in about a year and a half, which could be a big deal, and now he's in a new system. Maybe they only win seven games and finish in third. I don't know. But I think the Browns are the most interesting team in the North. In the AFC South, most interesting team in the South, the Titans are the Titans. They're bland. They've been the same team the last 5 years. You don't really care. The Texans, we know, are terrible. You can make a case for the Jaguars. Doug Peterson comes in, Trevor Lawrence a year or two. But I don't think the Jaguars are going to be very good. Their win total, I think, is six. I'd probably take the under. Are they going to double their wins this year? Maybe. It is a bad division, but I don't think the Jaguars are ready just yet. They're intriguing, mostly because of Trevor Lawrence. If they didn't have Trevor Lawrence, I don't think you'd give a rip about the Jags. But you want to see, okay, year two, what does this guy look like? I think the Colts may be the most interesting team. You bring in Matt Ryan, fifth different quarterback in 5 years. They just missed the playoffs last year. They got a good roster. Maybe Frank Reich's a little bit on the hot seat. Does Matt Ryan have anything left? Can they beat the Titans? I think the Colts are the most interesting team in the AFC South. In the AFC West, most interesting team. The Chiefs are the old reliable, right? You have the Bills in one division, the Ravens in the other. The Chiefs, same idea. We know what they are. They've been there. They've done that. We anticipate they'll be good this year. You don't really have to worry about them. There's not a lot of intrigue there. Sure, you may wonder, what's it going to look like without Tyreek Hill? I imagine they'll be just fine. The Raiders, kind of interesting. This whole division is pretty interesting, right? The Raiders, you bring in Josh McDaniels. They made, you know, they had a good offseason. They were in the playoffs last year. The Chargers, you have Justin Herbert, fun to watch, young, talented quarterback. Hasn't made the playoffs yet. Last year was a little bit of a disaster, especially for the head coach. I think the Broncos are the most interesting team, though. New coach who's never been a head coach before. And then, of course, you bring in Russell Wilson. And this was a Broncos team that I always thought was close these last couple years. I picked them to make the playoffs. I think that was last year, maybe 2 years ago. They were one of my quote-unquote sleeper teams, and they let me down. But I think they have a lot of good pieces. And now you add Russell Wilson. They have high expectations. And I like Denver this year. But a couple of maybe concerns. Hackett has never been a head coach before, and he was an offensive coordinator most recently for Aaron Rodgers. I think any offensive coordinator could look good with Aaron Rodgers. And when it comes to Russell Wilson, I love Russell Wilson. I always defend Russell Wilson. I think he's a very good quarterback. But he's coming off a lousy year. And the other thing I'll say that may be a little bit of a red flag, name me a Russell Wilson offensive coordinator that went on to bigger or better things. You can't find one. They have all been fired. And that's a little concerning. When you work with Josh Allen, you get a head coaching job with the Giants. When you work with Aaron Rodgers, you get a head coaching job with the Denver Broncos, now coaching Russell Wilson. When you work with, Matt Stafford, Kevin O'Connell just got hired. If you go through the league and you look, right, Tom Brady has gotten guys hired. Josh McDaniels has been a head coach after being his offensive coordinator. You work with Russell Wilson, great quarterback. Which one of his offensive coordinators has gone on to bigger or better things? Maybe that's Pete Carroll overlooking things. Maybe it's just a lot of bad offensive coordinators, and now Russell Wilson's really going to take off. Or maybe the one constant in all that is the quarterback that's not elevating his play callers or offense, and things may not change in Denver. I don't know. But I think the Broncos are the most interesting team. Shifting over to the NFC. In the NFC East, most interesting team, I think, is the Eagles. The Cowboys are there every year in terms of intrigue because they're the Cowboys. They could have Chad Hutchinson as their starting quarterback coming off a 4-win season, and they're always intriguing. But the Cowboys are the Cowboys. Yeah, sure, we have questions about Dak and McCarthy. I think even more interesting is the Eagles because the Eagles are the NFC version of the Dolphins. I look at those two as the same. Young coaches, offensive coaches, talented rosters, but they have young quarterbacks that still need to answer the question of if they're the guy. And I don't think Tua is. I don't think Jalen Hurts is. But if they can be, those could be two really good teams this year. I don't think the Dolphins can win the division, but they certainly could be a playoff team. The Eagles could win their division if Jalen Hurts plays well. But at the same time, kind of like the Dolphins, I could also see the Eagles finishing in third, having a sub-500 record if the quarterback's not good enough. They're the most interesting team to me in the East. In the NFC North, call me a homer. To me, the Vikings are the most interesting. I think the Bears are going to be lousy. I think the Lions are going to be lousy. And I think the Packers win the division for, what, like the fifth straight year? Not a lot of intrigue there, other than how is Rodgers going to do it without Devontae? Is there going to be more drama? It's the same old, but you know the Packers are going to win a bunch of games. To me, the most interesting team is the Vikings. They were 8-9 last year. You bring in Kevin O'Connell. The rest of the division's lousy behind Green Bay. The Vikings should certainly be at least the second-best team. And you wonder, can O'Connell get more out of this offense than Kirk Cousins? He played for a defensive coach his entire time in Minnesota. Can O'Connell, coming from McVay, unlock the potential there? NFC South, most interesting team, I would say the Saints. Falcons and Panthers are both going to be lousy. The Buccaneers are going to be fine. They're going to win the division. What's going to happen with the Saints? Can they be a playoff team? Are they going to be sub-500 like the rest of the division? And in the NFC West, most interesting team, the Rams are defending Super Bowl champs. You know, been there, done that. The Seahawks are in a rebuilding mode. So it comes down to the Cardinals and the 49ers. I'd probably say the 49ers because I think they have a higher ceiling. They were just in the NFC title game. But the Niners also have not made the playoffs in back-to-back years in a decade. Are they going to get back there this year? Is it going to be Jimmy Garoppolo? Is it going to be Trey Lance? And that leads me to the whole point of this exercise, other than I think it's a fun thought to think who the most interesting team may be in each division. But I also think there's a similar trend with all these teams, too, that, of course, like most things in football, it comes back to the quarterback. Why are the Dolphins the most interesting? Because we don't have an answer yet on Tua. That's the intrigue. We're going to get an answer. And it could go one of two ways. We know what the Bills are. Josh Allen's reliable. He's consistent. The Bills are going to be good. They're not all that interesting. The Patriots even, right? With Mac Jones, I expect they'll be good enough. They're not going to embarrass themselves. AFC North. Why are the Browns the most interesting to me? Because I really don't know what you're getting out of Deshaun. Is he going to be suspended? Is he going to be the Deshaun of old? He did not play all last year, and he may miss the first month this year. Try taking a year and a half off of anything, right? It may take you a few weeks to get going again. And if he's going to be suspended and then he's going to be a little rusty, that's half the season. Who knows what happens? in the AFC South for the Colts. Again, it comes down to the quarterback, Matt Ryan. Does he have anything left? In the AFC West, Russell Wilson. Could he be the missing piece for Denver? In the NFC East, we don't know. We don't have the answer on Jalen Hurts. That's why the Eagles are interesting, because we don't know about the quarterback. In the NFC North, for Kirk Cousins, I guess the question would be, is there more? Has he hit his ceiling, or can Kevin O'Connell get more out of him in this offense? In the NFC South, same idea. It's about the quarterback, Jameis Winston. I said the Saints are the most interesting team, because could Jameis Winston in New Orleans have the pieces around him to be the quarterback that the Bucs thought they were drafting, or is he, for lack of a better term, unfixable? And in the NFC West, I think Kyler Murray's intriguing. That's why I thought about the Cardinals. Hasn't won a playoff game, was unhappy this offseason. I think there's a limit to Kyler Murray's ability, and I think he's kind of already hit that limit personally. But I go with the Niners because of the quarterback drama. Is it Garoppolo? Is it Trey Lance? Is Lance going to be better than Jimmy G? Is he not going to be ready? Is Garoppolo going to be able to actually get over the hump this year? And I think that makes the Niners the most interesting team. So other than just giving you my thoughts, division by division, on how I view these teams and who's most intriguing, I also think the trend that may connect these teams, it's really about the quarterback. I don't think a certain team is most interesting because of their linebacking core. I don't care. Or their new defensive coordinator, even that, whatever. We'll find out when the season starts. But it comes down to the quarterbacks. The Dolphins are interesting because we don't know if they have the answer. Same with the Eagles. The Niners are interesting because we don't know what they're doing at quarterback. The Vikings, because, I don't know, can Kevin O'Connell save Kirk Cousins? Will Deshaun Watson be even better in Cleveland? Will Matt Ryan be able to win a division at age 38? Those are the big questions. Comes back to the quarterback position, and that's what makes these teams most interesting. We'll see how things play out starting about 5 months from now. No, pardon me, 4 months. Less than 4 months. 4 months a week ago. If you go by the date, September 11th is the first Sunday of the NFL season. And May 11th, obviously, was a week ago today. So we are less than 4 months away from the start of the NFL season. It'll be here before you know it. When we come back, the draft lottery was last night. I have a question coming out of, looking at the draft lottery, I have a question that I need to ask. Plus, I have a thought, like I've been saying all afternoon, on an appliance that I also need to bring up. We'll wrap up your Wednesday when we come back. More Midday Show, right here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio as we wrap up your Wednesday afternoon. If you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand. Search ESPN Radio Charleston however you listen to your podcasts. And the podcasts are also available online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Don't forget, you can take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go. Stream us online at charlestonsportsradio.com or through TuneIn Radio, your smart speaker, or our free app. Search ESPN Charleston in the App Store, and you can listen to the show live or on demand from anywhere in the world. The podcasts are available there as well. ESPN Charleston in the App Store. Appreciate listeners checking in from at least 10 different states and multiple countries on this Wednesday. Check out the podcast if you missed anything from throughout the afternoon. Talked about the Heat-Celtics game one last night, the draft lottery, and how I view the top prospects and the one I would certainly stay away from. Plus, talked about Mickelson and Tiger Woods and the PGA Championship, which we'll certainly be paying attention to the next couple of days while we're on air. And everything in between. Rookie quarterbacks and the Panthers. Most interesting teams in the NFL by division. All sorts of stuff, as always, that you can find on demand. After the draft lottery last night, I was thinking, and Trent, I ask you, there are three things that you have a chance to do as a sports fan.
Ooh.
You could either go up at the NFL draft, like Kyle Brandt, and announce a draft pick, let's say, in your case, for the Green Bay Packers. I think, is it Chicago next year? I don't know, maybe. You could go to Chicago.
Detroit.
Is it Detroit? Okay, then 2 years from now, you go to Chicago, wherever it is, and announce a pick for the Packers at the draft. I've been to Detroit. I can skip that draft. Okay, that's option number one. Option number two, you're at the draft lottery, like certain people were last night, mm-hmm. where you don't do much. You just sit there and represent the team, and then I think they usually ask them a question like, hey, how you feeling? Like you're a contestant on Jeopardy or something, right? Tell us about yourself, and you give them the one little sentence spiel. But you could go be there representing the Miami Heat if they're ever in the draft lottery. Third option, you go and you throw out a first pitch at a Major League Baseball game.
Mm.
Of those three things, if I was a genie able to grant you a wish, which of those three things would you prefer to do the most?
You know, Luke, I would probably have to say, you know, the first pitch, even though I'm not a big baseball fan. That's just such a cool thing that only the, you know, the top of the top folks get to do in their lives. But I think I could cut a pretty phenomenal promo. If you give me a minute at the draft to give the Packers pick, I'm going to let it eat, Luke. I'm going to let it eat. You know me. I'll let it eat real quick. But the first pitch, that's something everybody wants to do, I feel like, in their life. I'd probably have to pick a baseball team, you know, to cheer for, you know, fully. But I'd probably say first pitch. That just seems like the coolest thing out of all three options.
Wow, I'm surprised. I thought you were going to go NFL draft.
Well, I mean, you know I love the NFL, the Packers. So, like, I mean, if anybody in the front office listening, if you need a promo cut at next year's draft, actually 2 years from now, I don't want to go to Detroit.
Right.
Yep. Next year's draft, 2 years from now, yeah, you call me. I'll cut a promo.
First pitch. Would it be at the Braves Stadium? Would there be a certain stadium you'd want to do it at?
Probably Yankee Stadium. I just got family in New York, so yeah, I'd probably say Yankee Stadium. Even though my pops is an Astros guy, you know, so that the two interesting franchises dealing with a lot currently
That's
as far
true.
As cheating goes.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'd probably either do Houston or New York. Yeah,
I think there'd be a lot of pressure. You walk out, especially at a Yankee Stadium.
Yeah,
especially let's imagine, right? We'll say September. I won't go playoffs, but it's a September. So people are in their seats at the start of the game. You got 45,000 people there. You walk out there, throw a first pitch. You think you could deliver a strike?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Luke, you know, that's the problem. People doubt themselves going up to the mound. Now, if I don't throw a strike, at least in my mind, I thought, hey, I'm going to throw a strike here. It doesn't matter. This could be 92 right down the middle. Like, absolutely. No, but I think I could get it there. I'll get it there. It might be a little outside, a little hook to the outside, you know, maybe a ball, but at least it will get there. Some of these guys, like, I mean, who was it? Who was it recently? I believe it was a soccer player who threw out the first pitch. I mean, it went all the way left. Conor McGregor, he threw out the first pitch at a Mets game, went all the way right. Now you got to get it there. Just get it there.
Yeah, Steve Aoki, is that his name?
Steve Aoki, that's who it was.
Threw it on top of the screen, behind home.
Yeah, he's a DJ, I believe, and an inspirational music artist.
Yeah, that was inspiring. I think he did that intentional. He had to. No way can you throw it that high. I think he was doing it to, like, create a scene, to go viral or whatever.
Yeah,
or
you go viral
fun.
From that. Yeah, that's it.
He threw it on top of the screen behind home, the netting that leads to the press box. Nobody in their right mind accidentally does that when they're trying to throw a pitch. I would go NFL draft. I don't think I'd get too crazy up there either. I just think that'd be the coolest thing. The draft lottery, you're just sitting there. You don't do anything. And a first pitch, I don't think I have it in me. Like, I've performed, like, in front of people before and everything, and I have no problem public speaking, but throwing out a first pitch, I don't think I could do that in front of a baseball stadium.
You wouldn't go up there. Minnesota Vikings ask you to make a pick. You wouldn't go cut a promo?
No, I wouldn't go too crazy.
No?
No, I would say something, but I would keep it, you know, calm, maybe a little snarky, but I wouldn't go up there like Kyle Brandt or so. I wouldn't go high energy, you know, lighting up the stage.
It's cold here in Detroit, just like the Minnesota Vikings at home. We need to change it. What are we doing?
Yeah. I would say something. I would deliver it like that, though. I wouldn't go up there screaming and everything.
Eat a chicken wing when you're walking off, Kyle Brandt.
Before we go, I've been mentioning this throughout the afternoon. I make a sandwich every day when I come into work. I got a toast. I use a bagel thin. I got to toast it, make it nice and crunchy. And then I always unplug the toaster when I'm done. Do you have a toaster where you are, Trent?
I actually don't have a toaster now. But, I've been around
growing
toasters.
Growing up, I'm sure. You have plenty of toaster experience. Do you unplug the toaster when you're not using it?
Ooh. You probably should, right? You probably should, but I never have. Maybe the rents did at some point, but I never would unplug it after I used it. Maybe I'm just a bad kid.
Yeah, maybe. I think most people unplug it, and I do. And I think that was also something that growing up, like, you knew always you got to unplug the toaster if you're not using it. And I was thinking about this, and I was wondering, like, it's always something I'm used to doing. And I wondered, why do we always unplug the toaster? Is it because we're afraid of it, like, lighting on fire? That was always my assumption. So I Googled it, and that is why they recommend unplugging the toaster. They recommend it. So here's my thing. Here's my parting words before we go today. Why make a toaster or any sort of device that you need to unplug it when you're not using it, because there's always a risk that it's going to spontaneously start a fire in your home? It's 2022. Can we not do better than this? That we need to leave a toaster unplugged when you're not using it? You could use the toaster, but make sure you unplug. We can only keep it plugged in for 2 minutes at a time, because otherwise we may burn the house down. What is this? I keep referencing this trip I went on. I was there with nine buddies. We're all unplugging the toaster when we're done. We know better. We were raised right. But why is there a device that we all have in our kitchens that, God forbid, you leave it plugged in, you're going to burn the house down? It's 2022. Can we come up with something better that it could stay if you need to? You can leave it plugged in all day and not worry about coming home to a destroyed house? It's crazy to me. You got to unplug the toaster. I was brought up that way. I had family visiting a couple of weeks ago. Everyone's unplugging the toaster when they're done. You Google it, they tell you, unplug the toaster. This is not just some sort of made-up thing. Can we not come up with a toaster that doesn't just start fires if it's plugged in too long? Call me crazy. Those are my parting words for you. If you ever miss anything from the show, catch it on demand. Search ESPN Radio Charleston however you listen to your podcast. Life is a series of hellos and goodbyes. For now, we say goodbye. We'll say hello again tomorrow at noon. It's the More Midday Show on ESPN Radio.